Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh. And I'm feeling good.
Welcome to If Nothing Changes, Nothing Changes, Life Coaching with Deidre. I'm Deidre, your host, coming to you live on Inner Light Radio, broadcasting straight out of Richmond, California. Now, I know you could have listened to any of the thousands of podcasts on the radio, internet, or even satellite. So let me start off first for thanking you for picking mine. I am an organic therapist, personal mental trainer, self-esteem booster, good-hearted devil's advocate, relationship guru, archaeologist of the soul, and a boss, all rolled up into one, here to give you my perspective on life by guiding, deepening, and challenging your thoughts while influencing you with innovative, insightful information, not forgetting to motivate, provoke, and influence your actions. While in power, my show will be talking about life, dreams, relationships, love, happiness, health, wealth, fitness, careers, family, and everything else that goes along with all of that. I am also going to keep us about this series with this crazy president and his effect on Black America. And today's topic is how and why should we prepare for a recession? First, let's be clear on what a recession is. Recessions are the normal part of the economic life cycle when things aren't going well. It's the opposite of economic expansion. While experiencing a recession may be unavoidable, understanding what they are and how they work can provide some perspective and help us prepare to weather the next one, which may be right around the corner. A recession is a prolonged period of negative economic growth in a country. It's one of four phases in the endless economic circle of life, spanning from growth to peak to recession to trough, which is known as the bottom of the recession, and then we go back again. While it's frustrating that economic progress doesn't travel in a straight upward line, it's helpful to keep in mind that historically, periods of recession have occurred much less than periods of expansion and growth. But nonetheless, the U.S. has recovered from every recession it's encountered in its history. In the U.S., the National Bureau of Economic Research, NBER, a nonprofit, nonpartisan economic research organization, decides if we're in a recession by looking at signs of sustained economic decline across many parts of the economy. The data it examines include real income or individuals' purchasing power after considering inflation. They look at employment levels. They observe how much industrial producers output. They watch how much wholesale retailers sell. And they look at the value of all the goods and services produced during a time period. The NBER usually requires that these data points fall for more than a few months to ensure it's not a short-term fluke. Because in a recession, the economy shrinks, which can lead to lower levels of employment, worsening corporate performance, deteriorating stock market results, and higher borrowing costs for both consumers and companies. Many recession effects cause negative chain reactions. For example, when a recession looms, people may become more conservative with their spending. While this helps them feel more financially secure, it can negatively impact the businesses they usually support. This in turn causes layoffs, which decreases the amount of income others have to spend to grow the economy and may harm a company's performance in the stock market. This could cause even more people to rein in spending, continuing the negative cycle. Although recessions may correct themselves over time, they can also be helped along by governmental intervention. Now, we all know Trump's path to the White House was paved with promises of lowering costs for American consumers on day one, as well as sparking a revival for domestic businesses. An economic downturn could affect the approval of his current administration and negatively influence his party's chances in the 2026 congressional elections. Trump's second presidential term has brought with it a flurry of changes to the economy, though not necessarily in a good way. In between his eyebrow-raising foreign policy and a number of surprising executive orders, it's Trump's economic policies that have pulled focus recently, thanks in no small part to his sweeping tariffs and mass government firings facilitated by the Department of Government Efficiency. While Trump has since delayed his tariff wars, the economy is also enduring an increase in the unemployment rate, which ticked up to 4.1% in February. This figure was boosted by the administration itself, which has enacted mass layoffs as part of the cost-cutting DOGE program led by Elon Musk, who, by the way, left his position at the White House Wednesday. As the impact of Trump's tariffs and unemployment looms, the president has braced Americans with the possibility of a recession. He's indicated that a recession may be inevitable as part of the growing pains needed to enact his long-term economic agenda. The president has warned us that fulfilling his economic agenda takes a little time and cautioned us that we're going to have disruption. Those disruptions have already threatened the price of everyday goods for groceries and automobiles, which are expected to rise even more if Trump's tariffs go into effect. Such companies like Walmart, Shein, and Target have announced that they plan to raise prices and pass cuts on to shoppers. So since it's so difficult to predict when a recession will occur or how long it may last or even its financial impacts, there are steps you can take now or any time to prepare for one. And who better to give us some sound money advice about how to recession-proof our wallets and tell us what the government won't tell us? None other than our money guru and monthly financial educator, Kendra Willis. Hey, Queen, thanks for coming in on another Friday.
Oh, yes, thanks for having me, and I'm excited to chat today.
All right, let's get in there. What does it really mean to recession-proof your wallet, and why is that so important right now?
Oh, yeah. Well, when it comes to recession-proofing your wallet, what that really means in the most simplest terms is building financial habits and putting safeguards and safety nets in place that will protect your money during economic downturn. So if the market crashes, if everything goes cuckoo, right, you still have your cushion and your money is still being saved and it's growing and it's protected. It really involves the most simplest parts of it involve budgeting, saving, and then investing smartly. And most importantly is putting yourself in a position right now as best you can to start minimizing your debt. When you think about what's happening now with inflation and interest rates rising, these strategies are critical because the government typically responds after the damage is done, not before. When we think about 2020, we think about the COVID-19 pandemic, the government did not help people during or before the pandemic. They waited until people were desperate, until people were crying out and saying, hey, we're unemployed. I'm a gig worker. I can't drive people in the back of my Uber anymore. I can't afford to pay my bills. I'm on the verge of being evicted. I'm getting ready to lose my house. It took for all of those things to happen before the government responded. And by the time the government responded, many people had lost a whole lot of their assets, had lost income, had lost their ability to take care of themselves, had lost their ability to finance their own basic living expenses and bare bones necessities. So the first step to recession-proofing your wallet is really starting to build those financial habits and safeguards that are going to protect your money no matter what is happening in the economy.
Well, what's the biggest financial risk people face during a recession that the government doesn't even talk about?
Well, the biggest financial risk is job insecurity. So you got job insecurity, you have rising consumer debt. If your job is on the line or your job is unstable, I think a lot of people didn't know that job insecurity really existed on the scale and the level it did until, you know, the pandemic happened in 2020. But when you look at not knowing how secure your job is, rising consumer debt is just a byproduct of job insecurity. And then reduced access to credit. Those are some of the major risks that nobody's talking about. The government may highlight unemployment numbers, but they often don't address how quickly people's emergency funds can run out or how quickly people rack up credit card debt just trying to stay afloat. Most Americans do not have 6 months of living expenses set to the side. People just don't have that. So I'm always encouraging people to really focus on building your emergency fund, even if it's $10 at a time. I think sometimes when we hear the word emergency fund or setting aside 6 months of our living expenses, we're thinking that we got to put a whole paycheck in a bank account somewhere. No, you can start with $5 or $10 every pay period and just whatever you can afford, $5, $10. If you can afford more, if you can afford to set aside 10% of your income somewhere, great. But making sure that every time money touches your hand, you put some money up for a rainy day. That is something that a lot of our mothers taught us, a lot of our grandparents taught us, to make sure that we have money for a rainy day. And I just feel like the government is not really talking about, they may talk about rising unemployment, but they're never really talking about job insecurity. They're never talking about rising consumer debt. They're never talking about how you're not going to have access to credit because credit card companies, lenders are tightening up on how much they're giving out for credit and loans, and then also who they're giving it to. So we need to be aware of those things.
Wow, that was a lot, and that was a lot of information that we needed to know because I definitely didn't know about that, about the credit cards. And, you know, anytime you are getting picked who somebody gets something, you know what I mean? We're usually
right.
at last, you know what I mean?
There you go.
And we're already
there
finding that out, you know, so good point on that part. So how can somebody determine if they're financially vulnerable in the event of a recession? And what does financial vulnerability mean exactly?
Well, I think financial vulnerability really means, am I in a position where if everything stopped happening now, if my job said you're laid off, if, you know, if the government said, hey, there's another pandemic, you can't go into work, you know if you're vulnerable by looking at your emergency fund. Do you have 3 to 6 months of expenses? And it's not always about, like, a recession. What about an illness, an injury? You're not having the ability to show up at work for the next 3 to 6 months. Do you have your living expenses set to the side somewhere in a place where you can reach for it? So that's the first thing you need to do is evaluate your emergency fund. And then you need to look at your debt-to-income ratio. How much debt do I have? How much income do I have? And your job stability. If you are already living paycheck to paycheck or you don't even have a plan in place for income loss, you're vulnerable. Mm-hmm. It's that simple. If you're living paycheck to paycheck right now and you don't have a backup plan for what would happen if I were to suddenly lose income, you are already vulnerable. The government does not provide a personal financial health checkup. You have to do that yourself. And that's where people like me come in at, Coach Deidre. A lot of people are afraid to sit with a financial professional. But the biggest portion of my job is what I call doing a PFS, a personal finance strategy for individuals, which is simply just a financial health checkup. You need to know, are your finances in a good place? Are they in a scary place? You know, are they, is your money in a place where you just don't even know what your money's doing? I ask my clients all the time, on Friday, do you tell your paycheck what to do, or is your paycheck telling you what to do? Because if on Friday you already know your paycheck is gone because of, you know, because of your electricity bill, your water bill, your gas bill, your phone bill, your car note, your rent, if your paycheck is already dictated and spoken for, you are not telling your money what to do. Your money is telling you what to do. And until you get in a place where you're financially stable, financially secure, then the other thing, the alternative is you're financially vulnerable. So if you're not financially secure, you're financially vulnerable.
Girl, you, I'm trying to take notes and keep up and do all kinds of stuff, because that whole thing about the money teaching you, you teaching your money, that was deep. That's a whole workshop in itself on teaching people how to flip that around. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes, so I had to, you know what I'm saying? I had to write that down so me and you can talk about that offline somewhere, because that was power speaking in the word right there. So what type of income streams are the most recession resistant, right? And can everyday people just access them? Are they easy, or now do I have to get another job?
Well, when we talk about income streams that are recession resistant, then we're really talking about passive income. So passive income doesn't just happen. You have to do something to create passive income. So when we think passive income, a lot of people were thinking like rental property, people may be thinking dividend paying stocks. Those are considered passive income streams. But other things can be passive income stream, like you maybe putting a little money into an index plan, okay? So there are plans where you don't have to have a lot of money to invest. You can put, you know, $100 a month into, or $200 a month, $2,400 a year into an index plan that's going to give you a minimum and a maximum amount of interest. So they call it a floor and a cap. So say the floor is 0.75%. What that means is if I'm putting in $2,400 a year, the minimum growth that I'm going to get on that $2,400 a year is 0.75%. So I'm going to get a little less than 1%. You're not getting even 0.75% in most bank accounts, most savings account, you're not. And then it also gives you a cap of, say, 13%. So I'm going to get anywhere from 0.75% to 13% interest based on the performance of a specific index, like the S&P 500. But that's a place where you can just put a little money in and just allow it to grow, and then that's recession resistant, because if the stock market crashes, you're guaranteed to get your 0.75%. The stock market does well, you're probably going to get the full 13 or some 9-10%. So that's a place. But then you can think about side gigs like consulting or digital product sales or just sales in general. The main thing is, or the key is, figuring out how to diversify your income. So a lot of people are not going to talk to you about, you hear wealthy people talking about diversifying income, but I don't think that everyday regular people even think that they have a portfolio, or think that they have assets, or think that they can diversify income. You can. You can diversify your income with bare bones. You can make $15,000 a year and still put what little money you have in a place where it's still able to be saved, it's still able to have growth, and is still able to have safety and protection. It's really not, sometimes it's really more about what you know and who you know that can teach you something. And I think a lot of people, because we're not going in the bookstore looking for books. We get a lot of our information online. We get a lot of our information at our fingertips from online gurus, and it's always sounding so crazy and undoable. But the reality is, if you sit with the right person, you can be guided, or even if you pick up a book, you can guide yourself into how to just make what little money you have work for you. Because it's not about how much money you save. It's about saving what you have. So a lot of people make a lot of money, but they're not saving any of that money. So even if you have a little bit of money and you save a little at a time in the right vehicles, it can still grow and work for you. So recession-resistant money is money that is somewhere safe, and it's money that is still growing, and it's going to put you in a position where you don't have to actively do anything for it. It's just going to come to you passively. So you want to think passive income streams.
So it seemed like you done flipped into some real serious financial literacy information and stuff that we need to know. How does financial literacy play a part in recession proofing? And why doesn't the government prioritize it more, in your opinion?
Well, financial literacy is foundational. So if you don't understand how credit, taxes, or compound interest work, you will always be playing catch up. So the government is not – the government could care less, in my opinion, about empowering citizens with everyday financial knowledge. That's where educators and financial advisors step in. That's where, you know, your financial literacy workshops or you picking up a book steps in. But the reality is the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And that's by design. The government does not want you to be an independent financial guru, because if you are an independent thinker, if you understand money, if you understand taxes, guess what? If you understand money, you understand compound interest, you understand credit, you understand taxes, you are putting yourself in a position to not be needy. And once you are not needy and you start having thoughts, the way you vote will change. All of your actions will change. If you have a grip on your money, you don't need to go to the credit card companies. You don't need to go in the bank and beg and cry and lay on the floor and say, hey, I need to borrow XYZ. So then if you're not borrowing and they don't have those high interest rates to give out, and if you understand your taxes and you're doing everything you're supposed to do, Uncle Sam loses. So the government loves for the people to be dependent on the government. The government took every advantage of the people needing a $500 stimulus check, a $1,200 stimulus check. The government loved every minute of that. The government loves for people to feel like they must pay taxes so that, and for people to say, oh, I can't make above XYZ because I need to get the child tax credit of $3,000. Let me tell you something. Rich people don't pay taxes. Not in the same manner that poor people do, because rich people understand that there are tax advantage strategies out there. Rich people want to pay the least amount of taxes possible. That's why companies like Google rule the world. That's why companies like Amazon can make billions and billions of dollars and not pay any tax. That's why when they released our president's tax information a couple years back, people were shocked and appalled at how little he paid in taxes. Well, the reality is rich people understand he who pays the less tax holds the cards. So the government is not focused on the little people. The government is focused on macroeconomics and GDP. They're not focused on empowering the everyday people about how to make their money work for them. That's just not, it doesn't behoove them to do that.
You talking about making some smart money moves so that you can, your money can be smarter for you. What are some smart money moves people can make right now to prepare for a potential recession?
Cut the fat. Get rid of all of these unnecessary expenses. Let me say this. I said earlier that I sit with people and I do a personal finance strategy. And in that personal finance strategy, people have to come to the table vulnerable. They have to sit down and say, this is where all of my money is going. So we really, like, dig into their bank account and see what they're spending money on. And you would not believe the amount of unnecessary expenses that the average person has. Let me just talk about Gen Xers, right, or people that are in their 40s and in their 50s. I'm talking about tons of streaming services. You've got Netflix, you've got Hulu, you've got Apple TV Plus, plus cable, plus Roku TV, plus, you know, Cinemax and HBO and the Showtime package and all of these unnecessary expenses. On average, I sit down with people, and they're paying $100 or more just on streaming services. You've got the iTunes to listen to your music. You've got the Apple Podcast to hear a podcast. And all of those $9.99 services add up. So if you cut the unnecessary expenses, that $12 at Starbucks every single day, you know, all of the excessive eating out, if you cut those expenses, then you can increase your emergency savings. And then if you avoid new debt, let me tell you about the new debt, the things that people are doing now. Now it's fairly easy to get into debt without even having a credit card, because when you buy something online, they give you the option to pay in installments with companies like Klarna and Affirm and Uplift and all of these different companies that will add some, and PayPal, these companies that will add a little bit of interest, so they say, and allow you to pay the thing off over time. So people are buying clothes online. People are buying things from Amazon. They're paying $50. Well, it costs $50, but they pay $65 because now they've broken the payment up into 5 monthly payments. They've got a ton of these small charges coming out. So if you can avoid new debt, review your investments. A lot of people don't even have investments. But if you do have investments, review them for risk exposure. How does your 401k work at work? Do you know how it works? Do you know how much you're paying for it? Or, you know, those types of things. So if you have some debt, maybe refinance it. Look for additional income sources. If you are able-bodied and you can actively make some money, I would say now's the time to make as much active money as you can so that one day you can have some passive money. We can't sit around, Coach Deidre, and wait for the government to announce a recession. You got to be ahead of the curve. You got to get in the game before you got to be warmed up before the game even starts. We got to get off the bench and start worrying about our money, watching our own wallet. Because if you don't, you are going to be in possibly a worse position than many were in during the last recession, during the pandemic. We've got to put ourselves in a situation where we are not dependent or reliable or relying on the government.
You know, you said something that a lot of people don't say, and that's, you know, one of the things when I'm talking to my parenting groups, the reason that they don't like to go to and get any financial information is because they're always telling them to stop doing this and stop doing that. You said cut back. And
cut
I think
back.
That, you know what I mean? I think that I like the way that that's kind of put out there, because it lets people know that, yeah, I can still get my cup of coffee at Starbucks, because a lot of them be like, that one cup of coffee at Starbucks ain't going to save me no money. You're right, that one cup. But if you're going every day, and trust me, I know people who go 2 times a day.
Me too.
It is the cut back part where you can go from two times a day to maybe just 3 times a week. You know,
3 times a week, and then shrink it. Get a smaller coffee. Don't pay the $8. Pay the $6. And now you got $2 in your pocket. And if you take that $2 and you look at that $2 times 6 days a week, now you've got $12. And if you look at that, in a week, and if you look at that $12, now you've got $48 more to add to your emergency fund. So, boom, you've got $48 just from cutting back on the coffee. And then you look at all of your streaming services and you say, okay, so we're just going to do Netflix, Hulu, and we're going to cut off, Apple TV Plus, and we're going to cut off Showtime, and we're going to cut off this. And now you've got another $40 that you've saved from streaming services. And guess what? Now you've got $84 to add to your emergency fund. And if you look at it like that, okay, now I found an additional $84 a month. And then you look around at some of the other things you're doing, and you're like, okay, somehow I magically have $100 a month that I can put somewhere. Now you've got $1,200 extra dollars in a year. But the reality is, before you get to that year, guess what? You might have a flat tire. You might have, something going wrong in the kitchen. The dishwasher's not working. And you look and you go, oh, my God, that $300 that I had put up, that $600 that I had put up, that's enough to cover that expense. The reality is, almost half of Americans today cannot afford for a major appliance to break in their household because they don't have an extra $500. So if we can just start looking at how do I just put away an extra, where do I find an extra $100 a month? You can find that in that cup of coffee. You can find that in all those streaming services. Don't take away your kids' cable when you know they need cable for the summer, but you can cut the package down. That's all I'm saying.
I agree with you. And you know what? I'm so glad that of all the things that you said cut back, you have not put in our hair because, as black women, we ain't cutting back nothing when it comes to getting our hair
done. Oh, no, we're
not. Okay.
We're not. But let me tell you, what we can cut back on is the nail salon. We spend a lot of money. I know a lot of my friends spend a lot of money. Even I had to cut back because I sat around and I looked and I said, you know what? I'm in this place biweekly. That just doesn't make sense, that I'm having my nails done biweekly. How about I go, I work it out to where I'm doing just once a month or every 3 weeks. And even in that, that saved me a couple $100 a month just cutting down one of my trips to the nail salon. I mean, I know a lot of people that spend $150, $250 every time they touch down in the salon. So yeah, we ain't got to cut back on the hair, but we can cut back on some other stuff.
And you're true about the nail salon because I had to, I am a firm believer that I just am not going to put somebody else's kid through college because I'm getting my nails done. And during the winter, girl, I'm wearing socks. Wearing boots and stuff. I cut back on my getting my feet done and for months because they're not in sandals. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Ain't nobody seeing them but my husband, and he could care less if they're painted. You know what I mean? So you're right on some of those. It does just take back some cut back, but I'm glad that you said cut back and stop and instead of not going, because a lot of people are just like, these small little rewards that I do give myself, I need just sometimes for, my mental health or, just to
Absolutely.
Make myself feel good. So I like the cut back and not the, just cut it out entirely and go cold turkey where we just can't do nothing but go to work, come home, and look at free TV. So thank
Absolutely.
You for making that. I love that. What are some common money myths that people believe during a recession that actually make things worse? Because I don't even think people know that sometimes we're even in a recession unless somebody tells us, what I'm saying? Because we just, pay and just accept what's going on around us. So what are some myths that people believe during a recession?
I think that one of the myths is people think, cash is king, right? So I'm just, liquidity is important. Having money having access to your money is important, but don't pull all your money out of the places. Like, I think people go, oh my God, we're in a recession. I'm just going to take all of my money out of my retirement plan and put it in the house. No, I mean, you still want to keep your retirement plan. You still want your money to grow. Another myth is that, hey, we're in a recession. I'm not going to invest altogether. We stop investing altogether. No, you still need to invest your money. I see a lot of younger people who believe that during a recession, now's the time for me to just buy everything or just no. Well, recessions are often the best time to start investing, but you still got to do it wisely. Because I think if you think back during the pandemic, everybody wanted to buy Bitcoin. Everybody wanted to buy stocks. Everybody wanted to just invest their money somewhere, which is fine, but you got to do it wisely. Like, you got to understand where you're putting that money and how does that investment vehicle work. So I think a lot of people just don't under, like you said, a lot of people don't even know half the time when they're in a recession. So you have to kind of watch what's happening with prices, with mm-hmm. your surroundings. I mean, I think personally, I think we've been in a recession, pretty much close to a recession most of this year. That's why mm-hmm. bread is $6. That's why gas has been $5. And just because the gas is five whatever at the pump does not mean you keep going every 3 days and filling up your tank. We need to let these companies and the government know that we're not okay with them raising the cost of living, that we're not. So carpool, you know, stay away from the gas pump as much as possible. Don't drive as much as possible. I feel like during a recession, people think that they don't have a voice. And we always have a voice. And we need to make sure that, yeah, you may not be able to reach the White House, but you have a local government. You have a city government. You can reach your city government. You're the decision maker for who's in city council and who's the mayor. So you need to make noise on the local level. Don't just think because we're in a recession or we're headed to a recession that there's nothing you can do. You can put your money where your mouth is, and you can stop supporting a lot of what's happening. You know, if we're not in the grocery stores as much, they're going to have to make a decision. If we're not at the gas pumps as much, they're going to have to alter the gas prices. So, you know, we're watching right now in real time what's happening with Target. My Target, they have so many sales. I mean, now they just got a bunch of people in afros on commercials. Like, come on in.
Yes. Girl, I was about to say the same thing about, you know, us not thinking that, you know, we have money power, because literally yes. we have been able yes. to bring Target to its knees, and other yes. companies are shaking in their boots, and they are thinking like, we do not want to be treated as badly as Target. And not only Target, there's been some other companies that, you know, have also, Tesla has, you know, also been dealt with the power of the money, and how people are just saying like, no, this is just not going to fly. And I think that that was an eye opener, not only for a lot of millennials and even younger, because they're just like, look, protesting don't work. Well, guess what does
right.
work? Money. Okay.
That's
and
right.
Everybody
That's
gets
right.
hurt with money. I get hurt when somebody hurts me with my money. And I know Target was, they literally have been brought down to their knees. I can't stop reading about all the stuff that is happening to them, but I haven't been in one for so long. I don't even know, you know, what's going on inside there. But it looks like, you know, from
it's
the,
empty.
Yes, from the outside.
Your Target and my Target is empty. I was in the mall, and like I said, they had somebody outside of my Target, you know, big old afro in the sign, like, come on in, we got hair care products on sale. And I said, this is how you put your money where your mouth is. I mean, and we have the power. We have the buying power. And when you have the buying power, you have all of the power. So, yeah, you're right. Target has been brought down just because people say, you know what, enough is enough. And your one self can do that on so many levels, just on the local level with who you support and what you support and how you spend your money.
Yeah. Now, you've been talking about investing and how it is still okay to invest during a recession. Tell us how.
So, yes, it's okay to invest during a recession. I would say you invest selectively and strategically. You want to start looking into diversified index funds because those are recession-proof. I have a lot of clients, not to just mention specific products, but I have a lot of clients who are doing or putting their investments into things like indexed annuities or indexed universal life plans, where they're going to guarantee you a specific floor, and they're going to give you a cap. So again, anywhere in on an index universal from like 0.75 to 13% interest. Some of the index annuities have unlimited interest, so you can put your money into things like that. You know, a lot of people with money are doing things like putting their money into resistant sectors like utilities, healthcare, or consumer staples. Those things are smart if you have the money. But for those of us that are paycheck to paycheck with just a little bit of money, you need to sit down with somebody who can help you to craft a budget, to start working on making sure that first and foremost you have your living expenses set to the side. You're working your way out of debt because you want to have zero debt. You are properly protected. You have protection on your life. You have protection on your health. And then you can look at putting your money into those safe investments that are going to offer you safety, that are going to offer you growth, that are going to offer you tax advantage strategies. You always want to look for what's the tax advantage to this particular product, and it's also going to offer you protection and coverage. So you can still save, grow, and protect your money during a recession. You just have to be selective and strategic with where that money's going.
Got you. Are there any government programs or protections that people think exist that either they don't or they really don't help much? Because sometimes, like we say, we've been taught to lean on the government, especially, you know, some people who don't have a lot of money. But some of these programs ain't really what they're meant to be, or now I don't even know if they exist anymore because this man done cut so much. So what type of government protection or programs can we lean into, or which ones shouldn't we?
So let's talk about some myths. A lot of people believe if they become unemployed that unemployment insurance is going to fully cover their lost income. It does not. And also, disability insurance. If you become disabled on the job, I talk to a lot of people all the time, and they go, oh, well, you know, if I become disabled, I have disability coverage through the state. Yeah, it's a portion of your income. So a lot of people believe unemployment insurance, disability insurance will fully cover their loss. It doesn't. A lot of people believe that if they were to become permanently disabled, that their disability insurance is going to A, give them a state disability check for a life, possibly, so that could happen, but also going to give them long-term care. No, that does not happen. Your job or your state disability does not cover your long-term care. So in the instance that you are in a situation where you can't perform your daily living activities like bathing, toileting yourself, you know, standing up and walking from A to Z, and you need long-term care, guess what? The government is going to let you know quick, fast, and in a hurry. They don't have nothing to do with that. So I think we put a lot of dependence on the government. And then people assume that student loan forgiveness is really going to happen, or that it's going to continue indefinitely. We've seen very few student loans be forgiven. They may keep deferring. You may be able to defer for a while, but guess what? The government is cutting that out. They want you to pay your student loans. As a matter of fact, a lot of my clients got a letter stating that all of the forgiveness that they were applying for is now temporarily suspended, and that if they don't pay their loan within 90 days, it is going to go on their credit report. I think a lot of people think that their rental assistance is going to continue indefinitely. The government is working on making sure that rental assistance programs are shortened. So in the past, I know rental assistance programs like Section 8 have continued indefinitely, right? If you get Section 8 or housing at 20, you could still be in there at 65. Well, that's coming to an end. And they're going to, allegedly, from what I'm hearing, they're going to put time frames on to how long you can utilize Section 8, the Section 8 program. I'm hearing 2 years. I've heard 2 to 5 years. So I'm not sure, but that's coming down the pipeline. So all of these things that we used to think were permanent are now going to become temporary, and the rules and the guidelines are subject to change. So that's why it's time now, Deidre, for people to create their own financial safety nets. The government is hard at work trying to figure out how to cut the fat. And if you are dependent on them, they consider you the fat. So how do we cut you from having that government dependence? So don't rely on unemployment. I think every individual household, and I know it's hard to even think about this, but I think now we're in a day and age where we need multiple streams of income. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, our parents and grandparents were able to do it with daddy just out working and mama get to stay home and make the bacon and fry it up. But I think now we're in a situation where, one, there aren't a whole lot of two-parent households. That's the first thing. But even for the singular households, you need more than one stream of income. And that second stream can just be a hustle. You know, it could just be something you're good at, something you do on the side. But I think we need to start thinking long term, and we need to have our own financial safety nets in place.
Girl, when you said them student loan letters, I have had so many parenting groups where they ain't even been in college for a decade. And girl, ain't even been thought about that student loan. And all of a sudden, here come this letter. And girl, yes, that letter has been for real, because yes, some of them didn't even know how much they still owed on a student loan. They haven't paid on yes it for so long. And now you haven't budgeted for it. You haven't paid for it. And they ain't, I don't know if, I can't remember on our last discussion if they are, you know, requiring bigger amounts that you pay now, or, you know, that you're paying something in full. But there are so many people where these student loans are about to mess you up, because it literally is like someone from your past has just walked in and, you know, messed up your life. Because there are yes so many people. I didn't realize that there were so many, because I didn't even know a lot of my parents had even gone to college. They've yes never mentioned it before, and now all of a sudden when a student loan repayment plan comes up, they was like, girl, I got to pay my student loan. I was like, girl, you yes been to, you went to college? I mean, yes, not that it's – I mean, it just surprised yes me, because you know what I mean? You're the way that you're living your life right now doesn't make me feel like you would owe a huge amount of student loan. But they do. Yes. And yes it's not like, you know, they're, you know, it's only just people with good paying jobs or something like that. No, it's a whole bunch of people who just didn't finish school, but yes took out that loan, and then they then had it deferred for 150 years, and now here they are coming back and wanting it back, and they got the nerve to have their lip poked out about it.
Yes, it's, yes. It's
you weren't
terrible
forgiven that loan. Yes, you weren't forgiven that. So I don't. You can't just not pay something and act like it just goes away. At some point in time, there was going to be, if it wasn't going to be Trump, it was going to be somebody that
yes
was going to come
and
ask you for
they
that
have
money.
But well, the challenge was that Biden stood up and made all the promises about canceling and forgiving, and what he did was he paused it and then he left. So mm-hmm the payments were paused, and people were like, okay, I mean, there were packages, applications that went out to everybody with a student loan, and you were able to fill out this massive package to ask for forgiveness. And then after it was submitted, there was no word on it. And so that kind of, that was 2-3 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. So for 3 years, people have been waiting on pins and needles, thinking their student loan may actually be forgiven, and what it was just paused. And so now here it goes. It's coming back with a vengeance, with interest, and yes, a higher monthly payment for many people. And if you don't have it paid, that first 90 days is slowly ticking away now. So there are people who are going to have a negative impact on their credit as early as June regarding that student loan.
That is crazy. Oh, yeah. We've definitely been having lots of conversation about that because I didn't even know you could get it deferred for so long. Wow, that was amazing. So, okay, if somebody is already feeling the pinch, which we all basically are, can you give us some steps that we can take that can stabilize our finances?
Start now. Track every dollar for the next 30 days. We go into the first of the month is this Sunday. So start now. Start on the first. Track every dollar you spend. I don't care if it's 25 cents on a pack of gum. Write it down, because most people don't have a spending problem. They have an awareness problem. Not a spending problem, just an awareness problem. So many things are coming out of your bank account because nobody balances a checkbook, because people don't have a checkbook. And you're swiping that card, and you've got all these things automated and all of these expenses coming out. You've got satellite radio and satellite TV. So just track your every expense for the next 30 days. From there, you create a survivable budget. What can I cut out? What can I do less of? Because now I'm in survival mode. We got to get in survival mode, people. And then get on the phone and communicate with all those creditors you've been running from for the last 7 or 8 years. They're not going anywhere. They're just going to keep selling and reselling that debt. I actually, another thing that I do for anybody who might need help, I'm partnered with a couple of different debt management programs that will help people to reduce and eliminate their debt. And I'm also partnered with a tax relief program that helps people to get rid of their old back taxes. But that's also something you can do on your own. Just get on the phone and communicate with your creditors. Let them know where you are, including that student loan company. Talk to them. Find out if you can defer a little bit longer, shrink the payment plan, and then seek out legitimate resources for advising to help you create a step-by-step comeback plan. Let me tell you something. This is your time for a comeback. So you got to set yourself up for the come up so that you can come back. It doesn't matter what has happened to your finances in the past. You can fix your finances for the future.
Well, you know what? I'm glad that you said something about the awareness, because I think, just real quick, I just want to touch on this. That's where the problem is. Is as long as the card swipes, we'll keep swiping and not
That's
really,
right.
You know what I'm saying? And it's so easy now, especially, you know, that we don't get statements in the mail anymore. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But, and I feel like people are not just going online and even reading their statements, because
no.
You don't even have to keep a diary anymore. It's right there. Your statement
yes.
is everything, because everything's electronic. So that you can see when you go to the store and, you know, you done been to the beauty shop, you done been to Target 6 times, you done been to Walmart. It's all right there. You can just pull
it's
up your statement
right
and find it. So it is an awareness thing, because as long as we have the money, that's why we keep spending the money, even though
Absolutely.
We don't need all the stuff. And that's the second thing that I'm always talking about, is we talk to our kids about the difference between wants and needs, but we act like we don't need that same type of conversation with ourselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's, go ahead. That's basically what I was, you know, and I know that you teach some classes. So we got to get out of here real quick, Queen. Tell us what classes can you teach that can help us learn some information about our money, and how can we stay in contact with you?
Okay, well, I offer 7 different financial literacy workshops. Our workshops run Monday through Friday, 3 times a day on Zoom. I also do financial literacy workshops in person. Every single workshop is designed to teach you how to save, grow, and protect your money. And just to give you some awareness about what is a proper estate plan, what is a proper financial foundation, and how do you go about building that. You can find me on Facebook at Kendra Knows Best. You can also find me on Coach Deidre's website. So you can find me there. Again, Facebook, Kendra Knows Best, or you can email me at Kendra@KendraKnowsBest.com, and I will make sure to get back to you. We do complimentary one-on-one appointments. There's no charge for a one-on-one appointment. So thanks for having me, and you know, I look forward to chatting with you next month. Let's dig a little deeper into the subject.
We always do, Queen. Have a great weekend, and I'll see you
soon. All right. Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.
depending on who you ask, it's not a question of if, but rather when the United States will enter a recession in the near future. Certainly, many economic indicators are pointing in that direction. While no one can say for sure what the future will bring, it's best to heed the warning signs. Your chances of successfully weathering a recession are higher if your financial house is in order. If you've been taking a lax approach to your money, you need to start changing your money habits, because prices are expected to go up as many companies signal plans to raise them in response to Trump's slew of tariffs. Some companies began to warn that they would consider raising prices on consumers last year if Trump executed his broad tariff proposals. As the administration prepares to implement all their policies and tariffs, the impact on Black Americans will depend on how federal and state agencies carry out the president's vision. Critics warn that many of these proposals risk further marginalizing Black communities in an era of increasing social and economic disparities. No administration can ignore the lasting impact of its policies on communities already fighting systemic barriers. While the policies aim to bolster what the administration calls American values and safeties, they carry profound implications for Black Americans. So we got to be mentally and financially ready. So I guess that wraps it up for me today. Thanks for tuning in and listening. We can stay connected on my social media outlets, my Facebook page, If Nothing Changes, Nothing Changes Life Coaching, my Instagram page, at Coach Deidre, and past podcasts can be heard on CoachDeidre.com. So I'll be back with a new show Friday, June 6th at noon on the one and only Inner Light Radio. I hope you tune in again. Until then, I hope you'll be doing more than paying bills and waiting to die. Go live. This is Deidre, your life coach, reminding you, if you want to make a change in your life, do it. Because if nothing changes, nothing changes.